Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show here on KRFY listener-supported radio for Northern Idaho. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Huff.
Morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm fine. How have you been?
Wonderful. I like the fall rain.
You do?
Yeah, I do. It's piling up snow up in the high country, so it's great for skiing and snowshoeing, and we don't have to shovel it down here.
Well, it's good that you like it because we've got more to come. Why don't I do a quick weather report? Today, we can expect some heavy rain, 100% chance, that is. We're going to have a high of 41, so that should be cozy. Tonight, more heavy rain with a low of 38. And then Wednesday, guess what? Rain is likely with a high of 47. Wednesday night, rain and a low of 43. Guess what's happening on Thanksgiving, Phil?
I hear we might set a record high for the day.
53 with some rain, of course. Yeah. And then that evening, we're going to have more rain and a chance of rain on Thursday. So I guess we see where this is going for the near future.
Rain.
Enough weather.
Yeah, we have a great show today. We've got a couple sets of guests in the first and second half, so we'll launch right into it. For the first half of today's morning show, we have folks from the Kinnick Sioux Land Trust, Eric Grace, executive director and often contributor. I think you were even on last week.
I was, just for a short plug for a campaign that we were doing.
Welcome back. Your desk in the foyer has been reserved for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Dave Kretschmar, who's education director for Kinnick Sioux Land Trust. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So why don't we start, for those who are listening, maybe new to town, just crawled out of that cave, who is Kinnick Sioux Land Trust and what do they do?
Okay. The Kinnick Sioux Land Trust is a nonprofit that is dedicated to working with private landowners to protect open space that has important natural values to it. So if it's farmland or if it's wetland or important habitat or perhaps provide some outdoor recreational opportunities, we have tools that we can use as a nonprofit to work with the landowners to ensure that there is some sort of permanent protection put in place on the land. Mm-hmm. It's all just an important thing to know is it's all voluntary. In other words, we don't have any regulatory ability to tell a landowner to do what they want with their property. But a lot of folks really care passionately and deeply about the land that they own, and they want to see it protected for future generations. So we can partner with them to make that happen.
I know that the question that's on a lot of folks' minds this morning, I was even asked this yesterday in preparation for this, how did Scott's video do?
We are not 100% sure. So for those folks who weren't around last week, we entered with Scott Rulander of Gem Video Productions, made a delightful video entitled Land Is My Sasquatch, which was actually entered into a national competition trying to find a video that sort of captures the importance of nature and land to the individual. So there was a big campaign. The national competition was determined by votes, so anybody could go online and watch the videos and then vote for their favorite. We had a number of folks who helped us out and voted for Scott's video, but we're not 100% sure, but last we heard before closing, we were still short of first place, but we're pretty sure we came second or third place. But I still have a glimmer of hope that maybe they're still counting some final votes, and we'll get that.
Still a remarkable run against some larger media markets, and a lot of fun for the community to come together and rally around something.
Oh, sure, and we got some just wonderful press out of the event. And if you haven't seen the video, it really is worth going to our website and checking it out. Scott has done just a remarkable job with this. It's a very short, 2-minute video.
Yes, it is, and we've heard a bit about Eric and the current video campaign, but we haven't heard much about Dave. Dave, tell us about yourself. You're relatively new to the organization, new this year?
Yeah, I've been working with Kinnick Sioux for the past year in their education programs and working in the local schools and also doing some summer camp work and some after-school work.
Excellent. And so that should segue us into the educational programs, which a lot of folks may not think of intuitively with land trust. They might think of the more dry legal transaction side of things, but there's a human face to all this.
There certainly is, and the Kinnick Sioux Land Trust has been around since 2002, and we've done a lot of really good conservation work, protected a lot of important habitat. But what we realized is that the work that we were doing, the conservation work that we were doing, while it's very important to the public and to plants and trees, we weren't necessarily interfacing with the largest segment of the population as we could. In Bonner County, it may seem shocking, but 55% of the people in Bonner County do not get outside in nature on a regular basis. So when we were thinking about that and trying to figure out how we can prove our relevancy to a larger percentage of the population, we realized a great thing to do would be to start doing some educational programs, get the kids in the schools, get them outside, having those experiential education opportunities that maybe they're not currently getting. So we put a foot in the water and started doing some of that work. And it proved to be really, really popular. So popular, in fact, that we got some funding from the Albertsons Foundation, which enabled us to bring Dave on as a permanent employee to continue furthering these programs.
So tell us just a little bit more about that aha moment. What was it that clicked that said, this is the right thing to be doing?
I think it was when we partnered with the Clark Fork School, and Dave's going to talk a little bit more about that program in detail. We partnered with them and a number of other land agency groups to help them find sort of a new curriculum. And the demand for that was overwhelming. In fact, we saw enrollment at the Clark Fork School increase when they changed their curriculum over for that. And we just had these stories of these kids who were even for the first time getting outside or exploring a wetland or learning what the trees are around them, and it was sort of a remarkable transformation for some of these children. And it was really at that point we've got to be working with the next generation of kids. My job would be so much easier if everybody appreciated nature, if everybody got outside in nature.
And so that's literally where Dave comes in. Tell us about your background and interest in this kind of work, Dave.
Well, I've always loved being outside. I've always loved nature. And I guess when I was 30, I decided to go back to school and do a master's in outdoor education. And after that, we moved west and we landed here in Sandpoint and met a wonderful group of people who were deeply connected to nature and teaching kids, connecting kids to nature, and that led me further into what I'm doing now. So working with the Clark Fork School has been amazing. They started this outdoor education track, which every Friday is a track day. And so the kids, every Friday, they get to go outside and do an outdoor day, and that's where KLT comes in. We partner with them for 6 or 7 days a year, and we go out to this property on the border of Idaho and Montana that KLT owns, and it's 75 acres. It's got wetlands, it's got forests, and lots of animal activity, and we do a wide range of things out on the property with them, everything from teaching them about making primitive fire to building shelters and learning about tracking and bird calls and playing lots of games in the forest with them. Go ahead.
And you did some other things this summer too. You're wildcrafting?
So wildcrafting is actually a fall program that we started just this fall. But this summer we did a camp called Wilder, which was at the University of Idaho property. And just wanted to make a camp available to local kids who maybe don't get to go to camp ever before. So we made a camp that was really affordable and accessible. That was for 2 months. We had camp 4 days a week, and kids from 7 to 9, and then a 10 to 12 year old age group, and basically catching frogs and climbing trees. And
so, were they the same kids every day, or a new crop of kids each day?
Yeah, so we had a couple different sessions. I think in all we had probably between 70 and 80 kids come through our camp that summer, or last summer. And yeah, Mondays and Wednesdays would be the younger kids, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays would be the older ones. Just an amazing experience. Really wonderful just to connect with kids from all over the county. And one of my favorite days was having them dress up as local animals. So I would give them charcoal and cattails, and they would fashion wings and antlers and draw whiskers on their faces, and then we would have a big feast down in the forest.
That does sound fun. Yeah. Well, you know, Phil and I interview nonprofits frequently that are working with children, and as an example, Trout Unlimited helps teach youngsters from Clark Fork how to fly fish. Sowell is involved in helping kids up on the ski hill. This sounds a little different. How is this program different from some of the other nonprofit programs? for kids?
Well, I think the difference in that it complements the other program, the programs that other folks are doing. I mean, the work that Soul is doing and Denison is doing is remarkable. The TU work, teaching kids how to fish, is tremendous. You know, at the Kinnexu Land Trust, we're really focused on the segment of the population that wouldn't necessarily get out and be drawn to the other types of programs. And we also work really, really hard to make it affordable.
Yeah, there's room for a lot of children's education, outdoor education.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And you know, the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness also does a lot of in-school programming as well. We really can't do too much of this, in my opinion. And Dave can probably talk to it better. But, you know, kids aren't physically or mentally made to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day listening. Kids are made to run around and have those opportunities to explore, you know, get wet, get dirty, get in the mud, and those types of things. And there's just so many children here in Bonner County that don't have those opportunities for whatever reason that is. Maybe it's economics, maybe it's their parents work two jobs, so they don't have the time, or they're too plugged into their phones and computers. So all of these things are barriers, and what we're trying to do at the Kinnexu Land Trust is break those barriers down and provide those opportunities.
And so the fall and winter, it's easy to see how you might partner with a school like the Clark Fork School or Sandpoint High. In the summer, though, the schools aren't in session. How do you find the kids? How do they find you?
We actually had a lot of great local partners who helped us advertise our summer camp. So we partnered with the food bank, and they actually provided food every day, snacks and lunches for the kids. But they also put up flyers for us, and the local elementary schools as well put up flyers and actually actively helped us recruit kids for summer camp. So the word spread, and I think this next summer we'll have no problem filling the summer camp
now,
as well.
I'm picturing you with 50 kids. You must have some other staff or volunteers.
Yeah, I had some great staff, some other college-age girls that were on staff with us. And we would do 25 kids a day was the max. There would be three staff. So that was about the ratio that we could handle.
Are there any stories? Did you light up any kids' eyes that you can share with us, something that happened to one of them?
One of the days is a day called Motivators, and it's about things that you can catch. And so we would go down to this wetland area, this little pond that's at the U of I, property right by the driving range. You probably know it. And it was mostly dried up at that point, but there were a lot of frogs down there. And many of the kids had never caught a frog with their hands before or anything else like that. And so we were waiting and knee-deep water, and one of the boys sees something, and I just see him launch himself full length, diving into the water, and he splashed, and he went underwater, and he came up with something in his hands, and in his hands he was holding a painted turtle above his head.
I thought only labs did that. Kids too.
He had this look of triumph on his face, and I actually snapped a photo of him holding that turtle above his head, but it was a great moment.
Does sound great. Well, we know that there may be future plans for the U of I property. Was this part of the impetus for your purchase of the 75 acres in Heron,
Montana? Yeah, it's right on the it's south of the Clark Fork River, right on the Idaho Montana border, but it's in the state of Montana. One of the things we're doing obviously is land protection, and if we can find parcels of property that have good value to them for public access and recreation, then we're willing to work with that landowner to see if we can either purchase it or protect it with a conservation easement. The property over in Heron is sort of lovingly referred to as Judy's Place because it was purchased and donated by a wonderful woman named Judy. This was 75 acres. You wouldn't necessarily think in Sanders County, Montana, we need to be adding more land to the permanently protected column, but this one just lends itself to protection because it's so close to the Clark Fork School, and it's flat, it's relatively easy to get to, and does have a good diversity of habitat types on it. As Dave mentioned, there's wetlands, there's forests, there's open pasture lands as well. So it had all the things that we were looking for when we were looking to do a conservation project. The landowner was willing to sell it to us at a discounted rate, so we did get it for less than fair market value. We partnered with Avista, Avista Utilities. They funded part of it as part of their mitigation program. We also received some funding from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to purchase this piece of property. So
it's not far from the schools in Montana either for programs in Heron and Knox.
No, it's not. And it's open to the public, too. We now have put in a parking facility. There's some trail work being done, thanks to the kids at the Clark Fork School who are actually out there engaged with their saws and their, you know, and their whatever it is it takes to build a trail. So it is open to the public, and anybody can go out there.
And you have future plans for the property, too. You want to tell us a little bit about those?
Dave, you want to talk about the pavilion and that stuff?
Yeah, this coming spring, we're going to be working with the seniors. We work with the junior high and the senior high out there, but we're going to be working with the senior high students to build a 14 by 20 timber frame pavilion. So we're going to have the kids come out for a few days and actually put chisels and mallets in their hands and bracing bits and give them an introduction to timber framing. So they're actually going to take part in the preparation of all the timbers, and then in May we're going to have a big timber frame party where we're going to raise the pavilion and probably have some bluegrass music and a barbecue and
a proverbial barn raising.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Open to the public, and all the people in Clark Fork and Heron, and all the students from the school as well.
And what about volunteers? Are you needing helpers for that? That sounds like a fun volunteering project.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, we have a wonderful community of timber framers here in our area. Unfortunately, a lot of them are so busy that I know Colin Beggs is in high demand all over the West, and so his crew is often busy. But, yeah, if they're available, I would love some extra help with the timber frame.
So you also are doing some other educational programs, partnering with the Lake Pendre High School District?
Yeah, so been going into the schools and actually just working at getting them outside. So with Washington Elementary, we on Wednesdays we will walk down to the Arboretum, and for an hour or two of the classes we'll do everything from learn about the trees to bugs, insects, plants, birds, whatever the theme is for the day, just getting them outside and moving and engaging with the natural environment. A lot of the other schools don't necessarily have access to somewhere that is close by. Southside Elementary has a wonderful forest right outside their playground where we can take the kids. Farman, we walk over to the University of Idaho property, but that's about a 45-minute walk for them. So it would be nice if there was a natural area next to each school where we could just step out the door and go explore with the kids.
Yeah, that's the ideal world, but you know, work on that. Find some more property to acquire in your schools.
Well, I do think about that, and certainly that would be a luxury, but it is in the back of my mind that, you know, nature is not always easily accessible, and particularly in the schools where if you've got to put the kids on a bus and drive them, you know, that's an expense, and a lot of schools just don't put that money into their budget. We've been really lucky to get some funders who understand that and are willing to give Kiniksu Land Trust the money so that we can actually fund the busing to get these kids out there. But yeah, even for us, that's pretty expensive. Ideally, we do have, you know, a 25-acre parcel adjacent to every school that the school can use for outdoor education.
But lacking that, it's nice to have outdoor, if you will, facilities, using that term in the loosest sense, close to town. And that's part of the reason for the Pine Street Woods Project, isn't it?
Precisely, Phil. The Pine Street Woods Project, hopefully everybody has heard about that. And if you haven't, then I need to get the word out even more. And maybe that's why I'm here.
Here's your
chance. This is the time.
This is the time. So, yeah, the Pine Street Woods Project is another parcel of land that the Kiniksu Land Trust is looking to purchase. It's 160 acres up on West Pine Street. So probably about a five-minute drive from downtown Sandpoint. It's adjacent to the existing trail system up on Sherwood Forest, or the Syringa Trails, as they're commonly referred to. So this is 160 acres adjacent to the Sherwood Forest property that last year at about this time we entered into a purchase contract with the landowner who is willing to sell us the property. It's not cheap. It's definitely not free, and it's not even cheap. It's an expensive piece of property. We negotiated the best we could. We understand the landowner needs to, you know, to sell the property. So we are in the process of raising the money that we need to complete that purchase. The property, the total project expenses for this is about $2.1 million. We are very excited that we have now successfully raised $1.6 million. So we're getting there. We still have about $500,000 that we need to raise. Which in this community is a considerable amount of money. We have a We have a very dedicated capital campaign team that is working with the staff at the Kinigsu Land Trust to find that money. There's a number of foundations that we're currently applying to, and we're beginning to work with some private individuals who have some significant capacity as well. So we have, I think, till March of 2019 to close this project to raise the money. We're cautiously optimistic that we might be able to actually complete it by the summer of 2018.
So the 160 acres that are the Pine Street Woods are adjacent to the Syringa. How large a complex when it's all complete total?
Well, the math would be 280, but there are a couple of other parcels that are sort of on the radar right now. If we could work with those landowners as well, if we could raise the money, then maybe that's a bit of a teaser. We can't make any promises that it would be larger than the current project. But if you think about it, sort of this complex of protected land is nestled between Dover and Sandpoint, sort of the two major population centers of Bonner County, and what a luxury that would be to have 280 acres of permanently protected property that's an easy, an easy bike ride or an easy walk to or drive up to at lunch if you wanted to take a quick hike or something like that, right here in your backyard. And that's really how we're thinking about this. It's nature close to home.
And it sounds like a great place for Dave to take some of the kids out to in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be an amazing place for summer camps in the future. I love the University of Idaho property, and I hope it gets protected as well. But there's actually a lot of noise on the University of Idaho property. There's a lot of times we'd be doing a little nature sit, listening to birds, and a train would rumble past, and I'd have to pause us. There's a lot of traffic noise. So the Pine Street Woods is actually beautiful for that. It's quiet up there. Mm-hmm. There's very little noise.
Tell us more about your wildcrafting.
Yeah, so the wildcrafting program was an idea that I had for several years about just getting kids to use their hands and simple hand tools to create things. And I read a funny quote the other day that said, I miss my pre-internet brain. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, I kind of miss the pre-internet kids. And kids these days are amazing at manipulating screens. They're so fast, I can't even keep up with them and how good they are with technology. But they're not so good at using their hands to just with tactile things and using tools. I put some saws in the hands of some teenagers the other day, and half of them said that they had never used a saw before in their life, and that just stunned me. So the wildcrafting program is an after-school program that I do, and we use simple hand tools. I give kids knives and saws and chisels, and they create things. So we make everything from birch bark baskets to we carve wooden spoons. We even do some pretty off-the-wall things like tanned fish skins. I tell the kids that each of their fingers has a little brain inside of it, and if they don't use their fingers, that brain kind of just sits there dull. And so using their fingers, their brains start to learn in their hands, and they get better and better at manipulating things and creating.
So it seems very intuitive that this is a valuable thing for kids to be learning, especially in this day and age. But bring us back around full circle to how this plays into your educational programs with the Land Trust and how that benefits the larger picture of conservation in our community.
Sure. Usually I start most of the wildcraft classes by looking at the materials we have, and I just go out in the forest and gather most of them. So the birch bark, the ocean spray shoots, the maple shoots, the red osier dogwood, and I ask the kids what these materials are. And most of them have no idea what these plants are, what these common things are. Usually they can recognize birch bark. But then I say, this stuff didn't come from a store. This stuff didn't come from overseas. This came from right here in Sandpoint. And here we are. We have a chance to create something with it, to make something that's beautiful or useful or both. And I love doing wild crafting out in the field with the kids as well. So with the Clark Fork programs, a lot of times we'll weave that into the program for the day. So we'll have them take hot coals and burn a bowl out of a slab of birch. And
They love it. They absolutely love it. They're completely engaged and not bored. And that's one of the things I really is my goal working with kids, is that they're never bored, that they're fully engaged the whole time.
And Dave, you're no stranger to wildcrafting. Tell us how you became interested in this area and a bit about your background there.
About, I would say, 3 or 4 years ago, I went to a gathering, a week-long gathering, where I met a phenomenal group of people who were really connected to nature and to crafting. They had a lot of things that they had made with their hands, everything from their own clothing to their own shoes, their own eating utensils, and I was just amazed. I think I'd been looking for something like this my whole life, and I realized that I wanted to make everything as well, and so I've been on a journey just learning how to make things out of stone and leather and wood and cattails and anything I can find in the local environment that can be used creatively.
These classes sound great. I'm wondering what the upper age limit is, if Julie and I can qualify.
How do we sign up, Bill?
You know, we've actually had a lot of folks like you who are putting some pressure on the Kiniksu Land Trust to try to figure out a way to offer this type of programming for adults. And we're investigating that. We don't know what that looks like. Ideally, you know, Kiniksu Land Trust might be a teacher of teachers, so to speak. I mean, because you know, Dave and the other folks who do education work in the Land Trust, that's only one or two of them. But think if they had the opportunity to teach 10 or 20 or 50 other adults how to do this work, then all of a sudden, you know, you have thousands of kids who are having these experiences as opposed to hundreds.
And it sounds like we have a future show coming on.
Sounds like it. Really, a different twist, though, in educating youngsters and helping them enjoy the outdoors. So different from more formatted or formalized programs.
Well, it is, and I think what I really like about this is it's not complicated. It's really just getting the kids outside. Yeah. We're not spending a lot of money on this because we don't have a lot of money to spend. It's Dave and his imagination getting these kids out, just playing. And I remember my formulative years were spent with a fishing rod at 5 a.m. going outside and catching fish. And that was what was so important to me and shaped my passion.
Tell us how people can find out more. If someone's listening and they want to contribute to the Pine Street Woods Project or enroll their kids or just find out more about Kiniksu Land Trust.
Yeah, the easiest way is to either go to our website, which is kiniksu.org, kaniksu.org. Or call the office. The number is 263-9471, and somebody from the office can chat with you about where your passions are and how we can help.
Any last minute other bits of information or stuff to share with us?
You know, I got a quote here that I love, and it ties in with wildcrafting. If you don't mind, I read it.
Please.
It says, "We don't value craftsmanship anymore. All we value is ruthless efficiency. And I say we deny our own humanity that way. Without appreciation for grace and beauty, there's no pleasure in creating things and no pleasure in having them. Our lives are made drearier rather than richer. How can a person take pride in his world when skill and care are considered luxuries? We're not machines. We have a human need for craftsmanship." And that was Bill Watterson, the creator of Calvin Hobbes.
Very nice. Oh. Well, we want to thank you both for coming in today. We're sure to have you back as things develop on all fronts. And for those who are just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay. We've been listening in the first half of the show here to Eric Grace and Dave Kretschmar from the Kiniksu Land Trust. We're going to take a short music break and then come back with Tom Dabrowski from the Idaho Trails Association. But right now, I think we have queued up a holiday song.
Yes, we do, Phil. It's, of all people, Adam Sandler.
It would not be a holiday without a little bit of Adam Sandler.
With the Thanksgiving song. And I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Very interesting.
Thank you. Good. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And here comes Adam Sandler. And that was Adam Sandler with the Thanksgiving song. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandler, handle. Hey. You're listening to the Tuesday morning show with Julie Calamine and Phil Huff. And we've started our first half of our morning show with the Kiniksu Land Trust, and we're going to finish it with something even better, I think. Phil, why don't you introduce Tom for us?
Oh, I hate to draw comparisons.
But, oh, how true.
We do have an exciting second half with Tom Dabrowski from the Idaho Trails Association. And for those who listen to Julie and I on a regular basis, you know we love to talk about trails.
Good.
So we frequently have Tom in to talk about trails. And for those who don't listen to us frequently, tell us a little bit about the Idaho Trails Association, Tom.
Sure, Phil. Idaho Trails Association was started by some really smart people about 7 years ago. And the idea was that we have a tremendous asset in the state of Idaho, and that's our non-motorized hiking trails. The state legislature had a study done, and it turns out we have 10,400 and some miles of hiking trails. And the problem is we don't have the money to maintain all those trails. Nobody knows for sure how many of those trails are being maintained, but we do know that of all the trails, motorized and non-motorized in Idaho, about a third, less than a third actually, meet federal standards for trails. So that means that these trails that we spent a lot of money to build years ago are really falling into disrepair. So the smart people got together and said, we need to have an organization that will get volunteers to go out and maintain trails. That's what the Idaho Trails Association does.
And access is so important. We've been talking this morning with the folks from the Kiniksu Land Trust about access, particularly for youth. But trails also are a really important point of access for adults and youth.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that's so interesting about our trail system in Idaho, 10,000 miles, that's a lot. They take us to some incredibly beautiful places. Some places are so remote, they seldom see maintenance. We work on some trails that haven't seen maintenance in 40 years. And so 7 years ago when we started, we had 13 people get together near McCall, Idaho. They worked on 2.5 miles of trail. This year, we had 215 volunteers come out. We did 21 projects in 12 different parts of the state. We had over 5,100 hours of volunteer time out in the field, and we finished work on 103 miles of trail.
And I need to interject just to let everyone who's listening know that you might think working on trails as a volunteer is maybe not that much fun, but if you think that, you should talk to my husband, Daniel, because he's been on more than one of the trail trips, and I think it's one of the best things he's ever done in Idaho. He just enjoys the heck out of it.
And that's not just because it gets him out of the house.
Well, we hope not.
No, and Julie's volunteered on a trail project as well, and so has Phil. Yeah. It's all about the fact that here we are, this tremendous asset. Let's not let it go to waste. Let's get out there. Let's spend some volunteer time. If you like to hike, join the Idaho Trails Association. Come out and help us keep these trails open.
Yes, and there's a real sense of accomplishment when you've helped out, because if you use a trail and then help clear one, it's meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite anecdotes about why people volunteer for trails goes back about 4 years now to a project I was a lead on, and a young woman who came out for that, of an age when it's hard to sometimes find volunteers in their early 20s. We asked her why, and she was very succinct. She wanted to be able to point to her grandchildren something tangible she had built for them.
Hmm. What a wonderful thought.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yes, that's it cool. It is.
So a lot of these projects for ITA, because you're up here and you're a bundle of energy, have been up here in North Idaho. Tell us about last season here in North Idaho.
Well, we did 6 projects in Northern Idaho, things like the Mikinik Trail, which we work on every year. Down closer to Coeur d'Alene, we did the English Point Trail. And then over in Wallace, we did the Pulaski Trail. If a listener hasn't hiked that Pulaski Trail, it's about 3.5 miles. It's an historical gem. There's mining relics along the way, some ventilation shafts from buried mines. But then when you get to the end and you see the story of where Ed Pulaski saved the lives of many men who were working out there in 1910 when the huge fire went through. And so that's an interesting trail. We also did our first ever week-long project in Northern Idaho, and that was up near Divide Lake for the Bonner's Ferry District of the Forest Service. And we spent a week up there chopping bear grass out of the trail, about 5 miles of trail. It's the hardest work I've ever done. But it was very gratifying because when we started, you could barely see the tread. And when we were done, it was quite plain and easy to hike. It makes a beautiful 14-mile loop if you want a long day hike. And so really beautiful area.
Are you looking ahead at the calendar to next summer already?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I have a meeting tomorrow with some Forest Service folks to plan the activities for next year. Bottom line is we plan to continue to grow. Our model is the Washington Trails Association. They're huge. They're 52 years old. They do a huge amount of work on the trails in Idaho. And so our plan is to continue to grow so we can do more trails every year, get more people trained on traditional trail skills, and do more miles of trail every year. So there will be a whole list of projects here in northern Idaho and throughout the state. So if people are interested in a week-long project in an area of Idaho they're not used to, we'll have plenty of those.
And that can be really fun, too, just to get out of the area and learn a new trail area. I understand you've got membership drive.
We do. It's underway right now. So we're asking people from Idaho and surrounding states, or any place in the country for that matter. We have some members from back east. We're asking people to go to www.idahotrails.org. And click on membership. Your membership helps in two ways. First, it helps us get another volunteer to come out and work on trails or to work on other aspects of our mission. And the second thing is it helps us raise money through the membership donations, the membership dues. We're a 501c3 charitable organization, so dues are tax deductible. But they also, as Julie pointed out earlier, they just give you a tremendous sense of accomplishment when you're out there working on a trail. I've had so many instances where we're working on a trail and a family will come by and say, wow, we were up here last year and this was just covered with trees and it was hard. We couldn't get up to the lake and now you guys have cleaned it out.
So winter's not a quiet season, really. You've got a lot going on.
Oh, there's a tremendous amount. This is all about planning. And so we have to work with the Forest Service. In fact, I have a request of your listeners. And the request is, if you have any trails that you've been on that you like and you think need work, please send me an email. Send it to tom@idahotrailsassociation.org, and I'll get it. And tell me which trails you'd like to have worked on, because we work with the land managers, in this case, the Forest Service. They have their ideas. We also want to hear from trail users because they get out there and see the actual conditions on the ground more often than many of the Forest Service people do. So if you have an idea for a trail, please send me an email.
You know, volunteers, especially in this age of ever-shrinking agency budgets, are so important. And I know one of the things Idaho Trails Association has done is to train people. It's an acquired skill. It's not one that's necessarily hard to teach, but there are things to learn. Tell us a bit about those efforts.
Well, we have what we call a crew leader college. And this typically in the past, we had one crew leader college a year. This past year, we had three, our first ever up here in northern Idaho. And we had a number of people attend. And so we spend 3 days learning about safety. We learn about what to do in an emergency. We learn about what maintenance trails need, what the standards are. And there's lots of federal standards on what a trail should look like when you're done. And then we take people out in the field and we have them practice with crosscut saws, with Pulaskis, with McLeods, a number of other traditional tools. And by the way, I've noticed in the past year some stories in the paper or whatever about the fact that crosscut saws are an antique tool. Nobody has these anymore. And I can tell you that that's just simply not true. In the Idaho Trails Association, we have 8 of our own crosscut saws. We have access to another 25 or so saws. And we cut over 1,000 logs off of Idaho's trails this last year with crosscut saws. Why do we use an old technology? The reason is it's much easier to teach someone to use a crosscut saw than it is to teach them to safely use a chainsaw. The other thing is they're quiet, they don't smell, and we can use them in wilderness areas.
And quite reliable.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
They tend not to break down, and you don't have to lug fuel around.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And if the listeners have not learned how to use a crosscut saw or a Pulaski, this would be your opportunity. So I urge you to consider joining.
Yeah, one more reason for membership to be able to get information on that. And like I've noticed in my personal email box, it looks like ITA is rebranding its newsletter. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you. What we do is every 2 weeks we send out a newsletter. We call it the old saw, and it has some interesting news. For example, there are 15 wilderness areas currently. We hope there's going to be some more in the future, but 15 wilderness areas in Idaho. So we have each time we have a little story about a wilderness area so that us people, the public who own those pieces of land, know more about them. And then we have some tips for safety. We have a tip coming in the next one that'll be about Christmas shopping and a website you can go to learn about outdoor equipment. So it's a biweekly newsletter full of information.
So before we wrap up, I just want to hear, I think our listeners might want to hear again, thinking of those folks new to the area,
mm-hmm.
Favorite trail?
Oh, favorite trail, the Alpine Way, Trail 140 that goes from Clark Fork to the Trestle Creek Road. It's 18 or 19 miles in length. It takes you 4,000 feet above Lake Pendere. It's just absolutely beautiful, beautiful trail. And you can do it in pieces. The Monday hikers just recently went up Trestle Mountain from the Trestle Creek side, about a 6 mile round trip hike to it. Just beautiful mountaintop with a 360 degree view.
It sounds wonderful.
It is.
We're running a little out of time, but mm-hmm. Are there any other upcoming events, activities, programs, things to remind people of?
Well, there is one thing I'll mention. About exactly a week from today is Giving Tuesday. And that's a statewide thing where charitable organizations get together and they ask people to donate money. What the board of the ITA has done is they've committed personal funds to match up to a certain amount money that people will donate next Tuesday. So if you're thinking about joining, please do. Go to our website, IdahoTrailsAssociation.org, and click on membership. And if you do it next Tuesday, the board will match up to a certain amount the donations that come in as membership.
And if you think clearing out a trail is satisfying, doubling your donation is also very satisfying.
Yes, it is.
Well, Tom, we want to thank you for coming in today. We always enjoy hearing about and talking about trails. And mm-hmm. We'll look forward to having you back sometime in the spring to talk about training classes.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you, Phil and Julie.
Thank you, Tom, for joining us. Well, we're going to take a short song break, and the break for mid-show will be Shona Lang with Glad I'm Not a Kennedy. Phil, would you like to explain why we're hearing?
Tomorrow, November 22nd, will be the 55th commemoration of a tragic event in American history, the loss of President Kennedy to an assassin's bullet. And Shona Lang wrote a loving tribute back in the 90s, 80s, and I think that's what we have queued up.
And that was Shona Lang with Glad I'm Not a Kennedy. And we are back on the Tuesday morning show with Julie Calamine and Phil Huff. And moving on to our upcoming morning shows and then events calendar. So tomorrow, Phil, we're going to be having the Wednesday morning show with show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. The guest will be Rich Cretol from Sandpoint Community Resource Center. And we'll be hearing about the many ways that our community reaches out and helps.
So are Jim and Jack coming in Thursday?
No, I'm afraid they're not. We'll have music only on Thanksgiving, so they will not be in. But we'll be back next Tuesday on the 28th.
Yeah, and we've got an exciting show next Tuesday. We're going to talk about the Lake Pendere Paddler, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Do you want to give us a... All right, I'll go ahead and mention it. So our first guests will be Whitney Palmer and Shatil, whose last name I'm not going to pronounce, with Londoners. student founders of the Sandpoint High School Sasquatch Club with a look at the mysterious Lake Pendere paddler legend, fact or fiction. And then our second guest is going to be Marcy Timblin from the Bonner County Library with an update on the library expansion.
And in late breaking morning show news, Susie just stopped in to say tomorrow at 1 or 1:30, maybe we'll get that up on the reader board, a live in the studio special interview with the Shook Twins.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, who are going to be here for their annual Thanksgiving holiday weekend event. And we'll find out the info on that. It's called Give Thanks at the Panada Theater. It'll be on the 25th. It's their annual Shook Twin and Friends for their Giving Thanks concert. It'll start at 7:30 p.m. It features their eclectic style, fluctuations from song to song, drawing on their life experiences as they write about being Potter's daughters, the sway of subconscious imagined superpowers, and a chicken friend named Rose.
I've not heard them. I think I'll have to try and get a ticket.
Well, you can find out more about that at panada.org.
What else, Phil?
Well, of course, Thursday is Turkey Day, and Turkey Day wouldn't be Turkey Day without the Turkey Trot. So come on out, 9 a.m. to Travers Park for the 10th annual Turkey Trot as featured in Sandpoint. Bring something for the food bank, a can of food or a non-perishable item. That's all they ask. You can run or walk as far as you like. It's a lot of fun.
Will you be running, Phil, or walking?
I will be trotting because it's a turkey trot.
Good for
you.
So
it's a specific pace or gait, I think.
I may appear, but I don't think I'm going to be trotting.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm going fishing.
Of course. Yes. Isn't this the week of the Derby?
What else do I do? Not there. No, I'm going to the Rocky Ford Creek in Washington. It's a very cool place.
Oh, but this is the Thanksgiving week Derby, isn't it?
It is. Locally? It is still the Derby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fishermen are awful quiet about that sort of stuff.
So true. Well,
the Friday after Thanksgiving is always the annual Christmas tree lighting. And here in Sandpoint, that takes place at Jeff Jones Square at 5 p.m. It features not only the lighting, but a special Christmas story time. So come down at 5 p.m. for the traditional lighting program, which will this year include a Christmas story reading by Suzanne Davis, the Children's Library at the Sandpoint Library, along with a performance by Allegro Dance Studio. Greet Santa at 6 p.m. when he arrives by a fire truck, and then enjoy hot cocoa and share the joy of being together.
Perfect for after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We've got more, though.
It's a busy weekend. Thanksgiving weekend's always busy. On the 25th, the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society has their monthly, and in November, their annual meeting. This month will feature Eric Grace, if you were listening earlier. He'll be talking about preserving lands and water. It's a really important program, preserving lands and waters that sustain us today and tomorrow. Starts at 9:45, runs till about 11:30 in the community hall, free of charge. Just show up.
They're great presentations, and we only heard a bit about the land trust from Eric, so this would be your opportunity to hear more.
And in Sandpoint, Shop Small Saturday. Do we need to say more? Support your local businesses with Shop Small Saturday.
Okay. Let's get out there and shop small.
Yeah, we talked about the Shook Twins. That's always fun. And the Panada Theater, when the Shook Twins aren't playing this weekend, it seems like afternoon and evening will be featuring matinee and evening performances of the Orient Express. Again, you can go to panada.org, more on that, to find out more about that.
That's right. Ongoing. I think that's been playing.
But mostly it's about family. Thanksgiving weekend is about gathering around family and friends and enjoying the holiday. And whatever style you do, I know for us, we'll be doing the turkey trot and then making a nice Thanksgiving meal that we'll invite friends in for.
And we're about to wrap up, but I've just got to ask you, Phil, are you a traditional turkey Thanksgiving family?
Usually, but we do all the fixings, the stuffing, the gravy, the potatoes, the mashed potatoes, the green bean casserole. The one thing we don't do, but we're going to hear a little bit of it on our way out, is sweet potato pie.
That's right.
And we've got Ray Charles and James Taylor in a duo together, for those who haven't heard this holiday classic before.
That's right. And I've got to get off the air so that I can finagle an invite over to Phil's house. Have a great week, everyone. A great Thanksgiving, and we'll be...